So, welcome to our officially church sanctioned discussion of polygamy. Some people think polygamy is a dirty word, that we don't talk about that in the church. But I just want to show you something here real quick. This is the new seminary teacher manual. It's online. You can get it. Or you can order it for like $9 off LDS.org. But does the church teach polygamy to the youth? Yeah, we do, and they do a really good job at it. Maybe you've heard about Joseph Smith's 14-year-old wife. Maybe you haven't. Her affidavit regarding polygamy is right here in the seminary teacher manual. Okay?
So they're like, oh, I could be another
one. Well, hopefully that's not what they think. But, you know, some church critics want to say, oh, the church isn't transparent with our history. Now, with that said, this is now. What's your experience with polygamy being taught in the church? Did anybody grow up thinking, oh, Joseph Smith didn't have any plural wives?
Oh, definitely. It was so pushed under the rug.
And why do you think that was?
A little bit embarrassing. It was so not the social norm and the culture we're raised in. It's kind of like that was then, this is now.
Nobody knows what to do with it. Like, so even if you put out the information, how do you explain it?
Right.
I think there's also like a pendulum, right? Like, we're like so strong, yes, polygamy, and then it becomes illegal, and everybody goes in hiding, and eventually it's changed. So we're like, okay, I'm gonna do it.
No.
And I think we're starting to like figure out the medium.
Yeah, hopefully.
Yeah.
I can remember being very uncomfortable hearing, yeah, the church used to practice polygamy, oh, but Joseph Smith never did. And in my teenage mind, I remember thinking, that doesn't make any sense. Why would the prophet ask these other people to do something that, by all accounts, is very difficult? But he himself was like, nope, not me. You guys do it.
I figured he'd done it, but just not like Brigham Young.
Well, and you're right. He didn't do it like Brigham Young. And isn't it interesting how quick we're just to be like, oh, crazy Uncle Brigham. He can get away with it, but not our Joseph. Joseph has to be this, he's got to be a little better for some reason. I don't know where that comes from.
Well, no, but it's his wife. I mean, I think, I don't know. Well, I guess Brigham's wife, first wife, wasn't so into it either, but at some point, it was just like another drop in the barrel.
Well, yeah. So we'll talk about that. Actually, Brigham's initial wife had nothing to do with it because she died early.
Okay, so everything's fair.
there's a whole big story. So before I launch in, I wanted to get, what have you heard? What do you want to hear more about? I just want to give me kind of a laundry list of things that you have questions or concerns about. So as we go through the history, I can make sure to address those rather than just things I think are interesting. Okay? Ruthie, what do you got? What have you heard? What do you want to make sure that I cover that just doesn't quite sit well with you regarding polygamy and Joseph's involvement and all of that?
Well, I want to be able to explain it properly to my friends, because I always get questions like, so you're Mormon, you're one of the wives. So.
Okay, awesome. I want to be able to explain it properly. Other things you want to make sure that we talk about today? 14-year-olds?
Sure.
Yeah, that's a good one.
You have primary kids, right?
14's as young as it gets.
Good.
Well,
state dances, you know.
Yeah.
That's why it started at 14, right?
There may have been a 13-year-old, not one of Joseph's ceilings, but I think to John Taylor.
How early did it start?
Good question. Hey, how early?
From biblical till this dispensation.
Yeah. Okay, so kind of give the timeline of that. What are you thinking, Judy?
One thing, like, I think when I was a kid, it was kind of joked about. It was always like, nobody really had serious comments about it. It was always like, well, you better watch out because, you know, we in heaven, I'm going to get some other wives. I mean, you know, like, kind of that kind of stuff. And so, first of all, where did that come from? Because it's not, you don't hear it preached from the pulpit, yet there's this underlying current that somehow all the men in the church are going to be rewarded with men and more wives.
No.
You heard
that. No, I
heard
that.
Rewarded.
It's not
well,
a norm
Such a reward.
Such a reward. But kind of, I mean, that's kind of the feeling I get. You know, like.
I've never heard that.
20 virgins or?
Yeah, the 20 virgins kind of thing.
Yeah. Or that it's going to be necessary. Or that it's going
to
be necessary.
Let's pass it to.
Very good.
Yeah. Why?
So, and why?
I'm going to give Emma a fair mistake.
Emma. Mm-hmm. That's
it. And yeah, what was Joseph's miss? How deep into it was he? Now, how much involvement was he? I mean, I only learned
more than you think.
I only learned 20 years ago that he had multiple wives. I'm like, what? No, didn't know that.
Hey, that's a pretty good list to start with. So I'll do my best.
Do they teach this like during Sunday? Because I remember being in a relief society. I think I was like 18, and they talked about it. And then there was like slightly in one of the teachings of a prophet. And like then there was a lot of discussion, and people were offended, and people said, no, we should be talking about the negative things in the church.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I think the purpose of the church is to comfort the disturbed and disturb the comforted.
But I think that is the question. Like, you've got Joseph Smith manuals, John Taylor manuals, these people who obviously lived and preached polygamy. Why is it totally absent from relief society on Sunday?
Because it does produce heated discussions.
And it's tough. And I think one thing that we will see. Well, I'm getting ahead of myself.
Okay. So, all
right. You ready to launch in?
Yeah.
Okay. I want to make one comment first.
Go ahead.
When I was a youth, there was kind of a crazy guy in our ward. I mean, he was like, as the bishop would say, all the cups weren't in the cupboard. But he had like 14 kids and a really sweet wife. And the rumor started around that he had said that he needed it, that he had a revelation that he needs to get another wife. So I'm just putting that out there because I just think when we don't talk about these things, people read the scriptures or whatever, and like, because there's like, I think in 132, like, there's kind of some things that are like, what does that mean? Mm-hmm. Or maybe it's 131.
132.
Okay, and so like, I'm thinking, well, Brother Richie, you really kind of grooved on that or something. I don't know, like, I think it's important that we talk about this because I think people conjure up weird ideas.
We sure do. Yeah, we sure do.
Anyway, let's not have a Reed Richie going around anymore.
Okay. If someone were to ask you, why did your church ever practice polygamy, what would you say?
Altered.
Restoration of all things. Restoration of religion.
Restoration. Toltu. Commandment.
Raise up a righteous seed. A lot of people don't like to hear that one.
I think it was a refining thing. Separated the sheep
from
the
goats. Yeah, it did. By making us so weird, it just made us insular.
Okay. Go ahead.
Maybe there was a great number of women that, you know, they didn't want them to marry outside of the church, you know.
So it's almost logical. Yeah. If you have to have a celestial ceiling to go to the celestial kingdom, do we really think there's going to be exactly the same number of men as women?
So you're assuming women are more righteous than men?
Yeah.
I'm outnumbered, so we're going to say yes. Okay. I brought this essay.
He put a session in the temple.
We talked about.
Right? Yeah. If there's any parity between the temple sessions and the celestial kingdom. This essay, you can find it easiest. It's on the church's website. I just type in LDS polygamy essay whenever I need to find it. Essay released last year, or maybe it was 2 years ago now, by the church, where they go through the history of Joseph Smith's involvement in polygamy. They give some reasons for it, other reasons they try to distance themselves from. And what we're going to do is we're going to use this to kind of go through so that we're staying with the church's approved materials. But then when you have questions about names or situations or whatever, I'll be happy to go into the resources. So if you do want to do more homework, this is the place to start. Okay? Just Google LDS polygamy essay. It's this one on plural marriage and curtain of Nauvoo that's going to be the best. Now, fortunately, we live in a time when we have a lot of resources. Richard Bushman, he wrote probably the best biography on Joseph Smith, is Rough Stone Rolling. Some people, it's caused them a lot of difficulty learning about Joseph's history and his involvement in polygamy, because what they hear in church and what they read from the historians doesn't necessarily line up. And there can be a sense of betrayal. Why didn't I hear about this in church? Why do I have to hear about it from a historian? Now, this isn't just any historian. He's a believing historian. He's a patriarch historian. He's one of the best as far as that period of American history. He's done his homework, he knows his stuff, and he believes. So it's a good one. Before him, there were a few other biographies that came along. Probably heard of this one, No Man Knows My History, by Fawn Brody. Oh, yeah. She was, well, you roll your eyes. Why do you roll your eyes, Susan? Okay, not going to talk about that. She was President McKay's niece. Also, pretty good historian, well-respected in her field. This is a psychological biography of Joseph Smith, where she tries to get into his mind and figure out why is he doing what he is doing. So, hi Sally. We got bumped, different rooms. And as she handles polygamy, the only reason she can come up with is an overactive sexual appetite. He's a philanderer. There's not a whole lot that she can do with it. And so a lot of what is out there in the world regarding Joseph Smith and polygamy is really based on her interpretation of Joseph Smith. So I just thought you ought to know where that comes from.
She was one of the first to do a really thorough history on him.
She was.
People who are
fortunately, I'm grateful that Richard Bushman's book has replaced this, and so when people are starting to look for history and accurate historical information about Joseph Smith, people are going to this one instead of this now.
Who's the author? I'm sorry.
Fawn Brody.
Oh.
Yeah.
The
recently, we've had a guy produce these three volumes. I know you're wondering, how do I... Yeah, look at this. Joseph Smith's Polygamy, all three volumes. That's pretty big. Brian Hales is a anesthesiologist in Salt Lake Valley, and he
lost his job. He's had a lot of time to write. They have it.
Actually, a single guy.
All that explains
it. It does. It helps.
Also has a long time.
He had family who was involved in post-manifesto polygamy in some of the fundamentalist groups, and so he started to do some homework into their societies, their history, and then he just kept going back and back and realized, we really don't have a whole lot about Joseph Smith and polygamy and the foundations of it. And so he started doing his homework. I don't agree with all of his conclusions. He's a believer as well. He's also married now. He married another historian. And if this pile of books is daunting to you, I'm going to show you. If you want to buy one book and study polygamy, I'll show it to you here in just a second. And I don't get a cut, so I'm not trying to advertise anything. Okay.
So is that just like chapters and like thoughts, or is it like chronological? Or
yeah,
is it women?
Or is it what?
Women. A list of
just all the women. Yeah, he does. He goes through the history. Volume one ends with Nauvoo. Okay. It's more exposition of Nauvoo here in the second, because that's what is practiced most, and it gets into the biographies of all of the women and what happens to them afterward and all of that. And then this third volume, he tries to give the theological explanation for it.
Is it Hales?
Hales. Brian Hales is his name. And just as of last week, this was published by both Brian and his new wife, Laura. It's Joseph Smith's Polygamy Toward a Better Understanding. You can buy it for about $20, or you can get the Kindle version for $10. I stayed up till 3 o'clock last night reading it.
Oh. Well, so these are the same guys who wrote the three volumes, but it's the wife.
Right, the wife is also there, and so I think she helps temper some of his,
brings it toward a better understanding.
Edit it. Right there, that's so nice.
Yeah. Yeah, she is, because she's a historian, she's an editor of a few scholarly journals. I mean, she helps just kind of refine the whole thing. It's much more digestible. I mean, how many pages is this? It's not three volumes, let me tell you that. It's 232 pages versus all of that. Plus the Richard Bush, so it's really good, it's really fair. Also, just some background information. this essay that I referred to before on early polygamy in Nauvoo and Kirtland, he was one of the historians that the church consulted to put this essay together. His fingerprints, if you've read his work, his fingerprints are all over this thing.
Bushman or Hales?
Hales.
Okay.
Hales. So if you want more resources, I figured I'd get that out there at the very beginning so you could know, I just want to know more about this. And polygamy is not my favorite thing to talk about all day long. So.
What was that? When was that written? I'm sorry.
That book? The previous one?
Oh.
It was released just a couple, last week.
So. No, this article.
This was a year or two ago. So, okay. All right. So let's go through. We'll just start in Kirtland and work our way forward. Actually, I think we'll start in New York. Let's go to Doctrine and Covenants, Section 2, one of the earliest revelations we have as a part of the Restoration. And I don't think Joseph knew what he was receiving at the point when the angel Moroni shows up and tells him about the plates. But Doctrine and Covenants, Section 2, Moroni quotes out of Malachi to us, and I think this has something to do with polygamy. Can we read that for us, Marianne?
Behold, I will reveal unto you the priesthood by the hand of Elijah the prophet before the coming of the great and dreadful day of the Lord, and he shall plant in the hearts of the children the promises made to the fathers, and the hearts of the children shall turn to their fathers. If it were not so, the whole earth would be utterly wasted at his coming.
So what's this priesthood restored by the hand of Elijah?
Sealing power.
We understand that to be the sealing power. All right. Now, tell me, Trudy, difference between a sealing and a wedding.
Well, the sealing is done with the authority of the Melchizedek priesthood, with the sealing power in the temple. And a marriage can happen anywhere with authority of the law.
Okay. Did Joseph Smith ever perform weddings? Yes. We know that he performed sealings, of course. But we also have to understand that just as we talked about last week with the unfolding of the redemption of the dead, and how those ordinances worked, there was an unfolding, a line upon line, precept upon precept, that also went along with the concepts of marriages, eternal marriages, eternal families, sealings. So there's a whole lot going on there, okay? So first of all, a sealing did not always mean a marriage when they were first performed. Does that make sense? Okay. So we have evidence, and maybe you've heard about Joseph Smith being sealed to other men's wives. So a woman would be married to multiple men. The term for that is polygyny, polyandry. You can just say poly and then something, and it'll usually come out right. But most of those, well, I can only think of one case that we're kind of iffy on, would be where Joseph Smith is sealed for eternity to another woman who already has a husband to whom she will be married for time, but is sealed to Joseph Smith for eternity. Does that make any sense?
No. Back then it probably did. It's like there was this amazing prophet. I mean, you're sealing yourself to a prophet. That's like sealing yourself to Christ, all the nuns and whatever.
Okay. Now, also, interestingly enough, it was not only women who were sealed to Joseph Smith in this way. We have a few examples of a man knowing, well, I want to go to heaven. Joseph Smith's going to heaven. You have to be sealed. Again, remember, we can't always equate a sealing with a marriage. So there would be a man who would become Joseph Smith's adopted son in a spiritual sense and be sealed to Joseph Smith, because this understanding of the sealing, line upon line, precept upon precept, you just got to be sealed to someone who's going to make it to the celestial kingdom. So Joseph Smith seems like a really good candidate. Does that make sense? So this idea of a sealing, we always equate it with, you know, when you go to the temple and you get your white dress. Well, I don't get my white dress on, but Seth, don't wear a white dress in your sealing.
He won't. Okay.
He doesn't think that's good. Yeah, stop talking to them. So I would say that's one thing that we have to understand as we go forward. So it starts as early as Moroni coming and visiting. Look, Elijah's going to come. He's going to restore the priesthood, turn the hearts of the fathers to the children, children to the fathers. Which, if you think about it, who of us are going to be sealed to whom in the celestial world?
We're talking about so we'll all be sealed together, right?
If every spouse and parents.
Oh, the family, the whole family.
And then you go up, and then you come back down. So, Sally, we're going to be sealed. Now, there's a special sealing between you and your husband. We'll talk about eternal marriage. But again, as this is unfolding, we have to understand these two are not always the same things. Okay? So, there's that. Let's jump ahead to 1831, where Joseph Smith is working on the Joseph Smith translation of the Bible. He receives the command to start in Genesis. He starts making his way through. And as is told us in Doctrine and Covenants, section 132, Joseph Smith has some questions. He says, well, what about Abraham, Jacob, the patriarchs? They have multiple wives. What's with that? The response, Marielle?
Well, 132.
Okay, let's go to 132. Why paraphrase it when we can read it?
Maybe some of the same stuff.
What do you mean?
Maybe some of the same stuff.
Same stuff meaning?
No, maybe not. I'm just thinking, you know, that they could, oh, hey, right, we want to get sealed. Abraham's going to be gone. Let's get sealed to him. But
okay.
It's kind of different.
Marielle, if you'll start in verse 34.
God commanded Abraham, and Sarah gave Hagar to Abraham to wife. And why did she do it? Because this was the law. And from Hagar sprang many people. This, therefore, was fulfilling, among other things, the promises.
Keep going.
Was Abraham, therefore, under condemnation? Verily I say unto you, nay, for I, the Lord, commanded it. Abraham was commanded to offer his son Isaac. Nevertheless, it was written, thou shalt not kill. Abraham, however, did not refuse, and it was accounted unto him for righteousness.
Last verse.
Abraham received concubines, and they bore him children, and it was accounted unto him for righteousness, because they were given unto him, and he abode in my law. As Isaac also and Jacob did none other things than that which they were commanded. And because they did none other things than that which they were commanded, they have entered into their exaltation according to the promises and sit upon thrones and are not angels but are gods.
Okay, thank you very much. The Lord says, look, I commanded it, therefore it was fine. So Joseph already has in his mind, well, polygamy, if the Lord commands it, it's not necessarily a bad thing. Now, we have some reminiscent accounts of very early in the Kirtland period, Joseph Smith starts sending missionaries out west to go to the Native Americans. As they are going out there, W.W. Phelps, we have in a letter that he writes to Brigham Young, reminiscing about, hey, remember how Joseph Smith told us that we were supposed to take of the Native American women wives? How was that supposed to work? And then they reminisce, well, Joseph Smith said, he appeals to Abraham, says it was commanded to Abraham, it was also commanded to you. Now, none of those missionaries actually took Native American wives, but you can see how very early in the entire restoration, this idea is already starting to germinate. Joseph Smith's working on these things. So that would have been as early as 1831. Now, because it's a reminiscence, they didn't know exactly, but we could go and find, you know, when those first missions to the Lamanites were happening. And that's around 1831.
So those are the missionary letters are the historical records, right?
Yes, yes. And so that would probably be the earliest intimation of any type of polygamy going on or Joseph receiving anything at all. Okay? Question?
No. Discriminating.
Okay. There'll be a lot of that today, won't there? Okay, between 1835... Wow, I can write... 1835 and 1836, we don't know exactly when it happens. Joseph Smith enters into his first polygamous relationship with she was either 18 or 19 year old named Fanny Alger. Now, this was in Kirtland. We don't have a whole lot of information about her. In fact, in this essay, I'm going to jump down. Oh, did I? Where's Fanny?
Right there.
Right in
the middle. Yeah.
Right there. You skipped. Well, there are three of them. We'll get there in just a second. Okay? Can you see that one off, Susan? Go for it. Just that paragraph.
Fragmentary evidence suggests that Joseph Smith acted on the angel's first command by marrying a plural wife, Fanny Alger, in Kirtland, Ohio, in the mid-1830s. Several Latter-day Saints who had lived in Kirtland reported decades later that Joseph Smith had married Alger, who lived and worked in the Smith household after he had obtained her consent and that of her parents. Little is known about this marriage, and nothing is known about the conversations between Joseph and Emma regarding Alger. After the marriage with Alger ended in separation, Joseph seems to have set the subject of plural marriage aside until after the church moved to Nauvoo. Oh, so they separated.
Yes.
Let me read to you. Let me read to you a reminiscent account from the son of the man who it is claimed performed this marriage between Joseph Smith and Fanny Alger. His name was Levi Hancock. His son Moses records, "Father goes to the father of Samuel Alger, his father's brother-in-law, and said, Samuel, the prophet Joseph loves your daughter Fanny and wishes her for a wife. What say you? Uncle Sam says, go and talk to the old woman about it. Twill be as she says," meaning Fanny's mom. "Father goes to his sister and says, Clarissy," Clarissa Hancock Alger, "brother Joseph, the prophet of the Most High God, loves Fanny and wishes her for a wife. What say you? She said, go and talk to Fanny. It will be all right with me. Father goes to Fanny and said, Fanny, brother Joseph, the prophet loves you and wishes you for a wife. Will you be his wife? I will, Levi," said she. Father takes Fanny to Joseph and said, brother Joseph, I have been successful in my mission. So what happens, and we missed the angel, but sometime between this point, there's an angelic messenger that comes and he says, Joseph, you're supposed to do this. We don't have any record of that. Joseph didn't write it down. Now, you've probably heard the story about an angel with a drawn sword comes and says, Joseph, you got to do this or else. There are a few angels that come, and it's not until the third angel in the 1840s that we have some account. And again, Joseph didn't write down the night of or even the day after. He just told some of his plural wives later, look, an angel came to me and said, this is what I got to do, or things are going to happen. So the first one comes. He enters into this relationship with Fanny Alger. It's discovered by Emma. Now, when we say discovered, we don't know what that means. If she witnesses the marriage of the two, if she sees them being intimate together, have no idea what that means. But Emma eventually finds out she is not happy about things. She throws Fanny out. Fanny goes and stays with another family. Eventually, she moves to Indiana, I believe. She remarries. But interestingly, her father and mother, who were petitioned regarding the marriage, they stick with Joseph and with the church through the entire time.
So there was not a legal document? She could just, so they were not legally inside law.
Right. So how could that be? I mean, that doesn't make any sense. I thought that, you know, we're being honored to stating and obeying the law.
Well, they say legal and lawful.
Right. But we don't have a lot of these records. There doesn't seem to be a lawful nature to it, other than we go to Doctrine and Covenants section 131, where we're talking about celestial marriage, not necessarily polygamy, but just eternal marriage in its broadest sense. Okay? So section 131, in the celestial glory there are three heavens or degrees. In order to obtain the highest, a man must enter into this higher order, meaning the new and everlasting covenant of marriage. And if he does not, he cannot obtain it. Now the understanding in the church was that this is the new and everlasting covenant. And just as if someone was baptized by proper authority, if someone had been baptized earlier, that previous baptism was superseded, they saw this idea of celestial marriage, of eternal marriage, as superseding any legal marriage that had taken place anywhere else. So in a sense, when people want to say, well, Joseph Smith married other people's wives, well, in their minds, anything that was done by the priesthood of God superseded any legal marriage that had taken place anywhere else.
So in their minds, they were sealed, but they were also married.
Correct. Most of the time.
So the government should not have had issue about that because they were not really legally married. But
correct.
Then, of course, they had issue with people like having affairs even back in the day they got involved in that.
Right, yeah. And there were, Illinois had some anti-bigamy laws on the books. And also, we also need to understand that there is this idea. I mean, the Latter-day Saints are not the only one who are thinking about these things. There are other groups that are practicing what they refer to as spiritual wifery. And Joseph Smith even sends missionaries to some of these groups to say, hey, that's not okay. Which seems a little contradictory. contradictory. But
we're talking about goes Corey. Back to David, though.
Right.
I mean, what comes next in 132?
Okay.
That he says, okay, well, David, he was fine except for Uriah, because that was by his own.
And it wasn't sanctioned.
Little,
Yeah. And so me with Fanny Alger, you know, what do I think about that? The relationship between Joseph and Fanny. Some historians want to say that's part of why Oliver Cowdery, you know, that strained his relationship with Joseph Smith and eventually leaves the church. It's that plus some financial things, plus him feeling supplanted as the second elder of the church. So it's not just this. Oliver Cowdery, he never says, you know, I have the smoking gun that anything inappropriate happened. But that's all part of it, and I think all of us can understand. Yeah, Joseph, you're getting things the rest of us aren't getting, and what's going on here? And I think we have to be patient with these early members and say, well, how would we feel?
Yeah.
So we already talked about crazy uncle, or crazy whoever it was. What was his name?
Brother Richie.
Brother Richie. Crazy Brother Richie, right? Then we do.
Yeah.
Well, I refer to him as
well,
crazy.
Well, now he's talking about it.
So that's the first foray into polygamy. Nothing happens again until about 1840, where Joseph Smith enters into his first Nauvoo plural marriage.
So how long did it take for Fanny to get out of
there? Oh, she was only around. We don't even know. I mean, the record is so scant.
Well, I mean, it'd be hard to be in a household with somebody
who's
hostile.
Yeah, of course.
And she's like, and she had a lot of people on her side.
Yeah,
she'd have a lot of people on her side. So.
But yeah, exactly how long they're together or how soon after, we just don't know. Yeah.
So that's probably why she had to leave town. I mean, just the talk, the gossip and everything.
Yeah, I'm sure. It just would have been horrible.
Yeah, just remove herself.
Let's see. Let's go down to... Oh, we don't want to skip this. 1836, April 3rd, 1836, is when the promise of Elijah, or the promise of Malachi, and Moroni, quoting from Malachi, is fulfilled, where we have the sealing keys are restored. So whatever was entered into here by Joseph Smith and Fanny Alger was probably done pre-sealing keys restored. And so Joseph Smith is just doing it based on, well, I have the priesthood, I'm telling you, this is your assignment to do this. And again, they're working it out. I don't think he has all the details and knows exactly how that's all supposed to be accomplished. So, Ruthie, question? Ruminating.
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay, tell you.
So, did that upset people in the church? And
oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. There are very few people who are on board with this. It's interesting that we have this, you know, that statement that I read about Fanny's parents just being like, we'll ask the old woman, we'll ask Fanny. And everybody just seems to be so fine with it.
It's very romantic.
Yeah. But again, it's just the scantiness of the record, we just really don't know a whole lot of details. Yeah.
Yeah, I know Joseph Smith was following revelation from the Lord, but I think it would be appropriate if he got Emma permission, you know.
Right.
We're with you.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, I have, this will be something where I would have to admit that if the Lord is telling me, and I'm the only one receiving these revelations, I would be scared to death to tell him.
Yeah.
And did Joseph Smith necessarily, did all of this happen the way the Lord, I don't think Joseph Smith received the polygamy handbook. He's like, look, this is how you're going to do it, and you tell your wife at this point, mm-hmm. and this person, this is how, line upon line, precept upon precept. And he may have fumbled his way through. All he knew was he was supposed to do it. The how wasn't necessarily explained, as far as what we have in the record.
Yeah, sort of interesting to me, and this issue and others we've discussed as well, how the Lord just sort of watches Joseph sort of stumble and trip and do it wrong and just sort of work it out himself and does a lot of damage, you know, on the way. And then the Lord comes like, okay, you had a few, you know, years of messing. This is how it's going to be. This is how it has to be. Sort of waiting to see if Joseph and the other leaders will figure it out themselves. You know, we talked about even in Nauvoo with getting the temple, doing baptisms in the river and everything. He lets that happen for a while, and then the Lord's like, okay, that was fun, but this is how it's going to be.
Now I'm going to give you some more parameters.
Yeah.
And as far as polygamy goes, the parameters really don't come until Brigham and Salt Lake.
Yeah.
One thing I've wondered and thought is that possibly Joseph knew that this was going to be trouble anyway. He did it. And it was between him and the Lord. And so he knew Emma wouldn't like it. And maybe spare her if he could. Or let her not have to worry about it for a while. I don't know. I just try and think, like, what was he thinking? Like, and that's all I can come to is that maybe...
To protect her and then
What would a good man think? You know, what would a really good man think? What would be his motivation? And we have to trust that that was what Joseph was thinking. He's a good man. He's not like just some sort of licentious, you know.
I think there is something to that because we look at it, you know, with our 2015 perspective, trying to make sense of all of this. And I don't know, who's the shortest person in here?
Okay. She loves to take that question.
Do you? You ever been to a basketball game and everybody stands up? What happens to you?
I can't see.
But how do you know what's going on?
Well, I have to stand over it and be able to.
But what if you can't see anything that's going on? How can you get a sense for how the game's
going?
You
just hear it.
Right?
Use your senses.
And that's what I think we can do with this, is Joseph Smith is not being accused by anyone of being a philanderer, of being this licentious, sex-crazed maniac that is just going after 18, 19-year-old girls.
Well, and 18, that's normal then.
It is that.
That's old, actually. That's even older.
Yeah. And so there's no smoke there. There's no people just saying, you know, oh my goodness, this Joseph Smith character. Now, the only person that kind of gets ruffled was Oliver Cowdery, and I mentioned him already. But in his affidavit, you know, he has to say, yeah, I don't know what's going on. Joseph Smith never said that it was adultery. I'm just going to have to take him at his word. So, if anything, that's it. Of all the people who were involved, the person who performs the marriage, the parents, Fanny herself, you know, when she was asked later in life, she said, well, that's a private affair. It's not something that I'm willing to discuss.
I think a lot of the record does show that the people that participated and had their own revelations and had their own experiences to prepare them. So maybe that's the kind of thing where the Algers had, that it wasn't out of the blue for them.
Yeah, we just don't have a record of it.
Yeah. So
because we know it was that way for Brigham. We know it was that way for Heber C. Kimball
and
his wife.
Well, a lot of the women who said no and then would come back the next day and
say,
like,
Lord,
okay, the
Lord
has told me.
Yeah, we'll talk about some of that. So April 3rd, the sealing keys restored. Sometime before 1840, we have an angel coming the second time and saying, Joseph, look, remember? This is something. I know you just spent, you know, a good time in Liberty Jail. Now you're in, I guess I should say good time. You spent a length of time in Liberty Jail. But now the saints are established in Nauvoo. This is something that we need to revisit. And so jumping forward, we have Joseph's first Nauvoo marriage is 1840 to a woman named Louisa Beeman. Louisa and Joseph Smith were sealed April of 1841. Joseph married many additional wives and authorized other Latter-day Saints to practice plural marriage. The practice spread slowly at first. By June 1844, when Joseph died, approximately 29 men and 50 women had entered into plural marriage. In addition to Joseph and his wives, when the saints entered the Salt Lake Valley in 47, at least 196 men and 521 women had entered into plural marriages. Participants in these early plural marriages pledged to keep their involvement confidential, though they anticipated a time when the practice would be publicly acknowledged. So, Louisa Beeman, she is an example of... So we kind of have three different categories of Joseph Smith's polygamous relationships. There were those marriages that were for time and eternity. There were some marriages that were for time only, and there were some that were for eternity only. Louisa Beeman was an example of one that was for time and eternity. So some who were familiar with the union between Joseph Smith and Louisa Beeman. And the question always comes up, were these marriages consummated? were there intimate relationships? And with this first one, yes, the evidence seems to point that there was. There were people that say a couple of days after, they, you know, they stayed the night at our house. Now I doubt people were there, but that's all we're going to talk about. So.
So were there children?
Were there children? If any, we only have, there's only one that would have survived to adulthood. And so again, the argument that Joseph's just this philanderer, well, where are all of the children?
So there was one that survived to adulthood?
That we think. There's been lots of DNA testing that you know, researchers have tried to get into all of this. But yeah, the biological evidence just isn't there that Joseph Smith was just sleeping around with lots and lots of them. And we know that he was, you know, he had 8 children with Emma, and a lot of his plural wives that after he died were then sealed to Brigham Young or Heber C. Kimball or John Taylor. They had children with those men. And so the biology speaks and says, it wasn't just about sex. Sorry, Fong Brody, we got that one wrong. That's not what it was about. There's something else, something of a higher nature going on here. Yeah. Not the funnest of things to talk about, right? It just smacks so, oof. But then again, we get back into the questions of why. It was brought up a specific trial, conditioned maybe to the saints at this time. I mean, is this something just for Joseph to test his loyalty, to steal his heart? Something, you know, with great revelations always comes great responsibility. I don't know exactly how that goes. That seems a little mean. Mm-hmm. The Lord's like, you know what? We're going to not only affect your life, but Emma's and all these other wives and any children that might come to these unions. That seems really, really hard. But I also believe in a God that tugs at those heartstrings that seem to be most near and dear. And the more light and knowledge we're given, the harder those tuggings seem to be. So, I don't know.
And there's some proof in the pudding.
What do you mean?
That these families that were practicing, I mean, they grew the church in ways that missionary work couldn't or wasn't happening. Mm-hmm. So just to get a foothold,
Thanks for bringing that up, because let's go back to the seemingly contradictory scripture in the Book of Mormon, where it says, Jacob tells the Nephites, one man, one woman.
Yeah.
So go to Jacob chapter 2 or 3. Chapter 2. So as you'll recall, Jacob is giving this exposition on the law of chastity. And then he says, verse 27, wherefore, my brethren, hear me, Jacob chapter 2, verse 27, wherefore, my brethren, hear me and hearken to the word of the Lord, for there shall not any man among you have save it be one wife, and concubines he shall have none. Verse 30, this is the caveat, the asterisk verse, so to say. For if I will, saith the Lord of hosts, raise up seed unto me, I will command my people, otherwise they shall hearken unto these things. So the argument then is, if one of the reasons for Joseph Smith practicing polygamy was to raise up a righteous generation unto me, well, he wasn't very successful because there's only one child, one potential child that survives to adulthood.
It wasn't just about him, though.
Okay.
It was good people. And he had to be an example.
Mm-hmm.
So whether it worked for him or whether it didn't work for him, and Joseph, he didn't really think this through. He probably didn't read this and go, oh, yeah, that's what this is all about.
I don't think he was trying to proof text the scriptures. I think he was going with, here's what angels of the Lord are telling me.
Angels of swords.
Yeah. And so that third one does come at this time. So Joseph marries Louisa Beeman. It's a time and eternity marriage. And then the next 7 ceilings that he's entered into are eternity-only marriages. And so it's after that, those eternity-only marriages, that the angel comes the third time with the drawn sword and says, Joseph, it's not quite the program. I mean, we can see how you're trying to live the letter of the law and appease what the Lord is telling you to do. It's not quite it, though. And so then there are quite a few after that. But let's talk about some of the other saints that were asked to do the same thing, so that it gives some perspective. And for this, I'm going to read out of the seminary manual. This is a hard story, but it's pretty incredible. So this comes from Helen Marr Kimball. She was the oldest daughter of Heber C. Kimball, member of the Quorum of the Twelve, will eventually become Brigham Young's first counselor, and his wife, Valette. Helen Marr was the 14-year-old bride of Joseph Smith. Now, when I say bride, that makes us think, you know, there was a dress and a ceremony and all of that. Now, if anything, the story behind her relationship with Joseph Smith is her father, Heber, comes and says, "Joseph, I want our families to be welded together. Will you take my daughter and then be sealed to her?" And so it's almost kind of a dynasty.
Yeah, like European kingdoms, you know.
Kind of, right? But again, if we're understanding that not all sealings necessarily have this romantic matrimony idea involved. Now, with her being sealed to Joseph Smith, she was legally married. And so when all of the other kids are going off to dances and flirting with the boys, she doesn't get to do that. And her reminiscences of those times are like, yeah, that was hard. But I knew there was a higher law that I was being asked to live. And she's a fierce defender of polygamy for her entire life. Anyhow, here's the story of the Kimballs. Valette Kimball, President Heber C. Kimball's first wife, received a testimony of plural marriage. Her daughter, Helen, recounted, "My mother often told me that she could not doubt the plural order of marriage, that the plural order of marriage was of God, for the Lord had revealed it to her in the answer to prayer. In Nauvoo, shortly after his return from England, my father, among others of his brethren, was taught the plural wife doctrine. My father realized the situation fully, and the love and reverence he bore for the prophet were so great that he would sooner have laid down his life than have betrayed him. This was one of the greatest tests of his faith that he ever experienced. My mother, Valette Kimball, had noticed a change in his manner and appearance, and when she inquired the cause, he tried to evade her question. At last, he promised that he would tell her after a while, if she would only wait. This trouble so worked upon his mind that his anxious and haggard looks betrayed him daily and hourly. And finally, his misery became so unbearable that it was impossible to control his feelings. He became sick in body, but his mental wretchedness was too great to allow all his retiring. And he would walk the floor till nearly morning, and sometimes the agony of his mind was so terrible that he would wring his hands and weep like a child, and beseech the Lord to be merciful and reveal to her this principle. The anguish of their hearts was indescribable, and when she found it was useless to beseech him longer, she retired to her room and bowed before the Lord, poured out her soul in prayer to him, and said, 'If any lack wisdom, let him ask of God, who giveth to all men liberally and upbraideth not.' Before her was illustrated the order of celestial marriage, in all its beauty and glory, together with the great exaltation and honor it would confer upon her in that immortal and celestial sphere. If she would accept it and stand in her place by her husband's side, she also saw that the woman who he had taken to wife and had contemplated with joy the vast and boundless love and union which this order would bring about, as well as the increase of her husband's kingdom and the power and glory extending throughout the eternity's world without end. With a countenance beaming with joy, for she was filled with the Spirit of God, she returned to my father, saying, 'Heber, what you kept from me, the Lord has shown me.' She told me she never saw so happy a man as father was when he described the vision and told him she was satisfied and knew it was of God. She covenanted to stand by him and honor the principle which covenant she faithfully kept and fought her trials, and though her trials were heavy and grievous to bear, she knew that father was also being tried and her integrity was unflinching to the end. She gave my father many wives, and they always found in my mother a faithful friend." That's pretty heavy.
So he had already taken another wife, and he didn't want to tell his wife.
Well, here's the front end of the story. Joseph comes to Heber and says, "Heber, the Lord wants you to give me the lake for one of my little wives."
I've heard this.
Dun, 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 right? And Heber's he's just excited. No, this is ridiculous. And so the two of them, they then go to Joseph, and he was willing to give his wife to Joseph to be sealed. And Joseph, it is enough, it is enough. You know, you've passed the test.
Oh, lady, I think.
Very similar, right? And so then they are one of the first couples to enter into, to be sealed as an eternal couple. Not a brewer of the Red Brick Store. So, I know, it just, just tears at you.
You wonder, I mean, if the Lord told him to take the lake, and then the Lord's like, through Joseph, said, that's enough, you know, that's all I needed to say.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, that's a tough one. So, and back up, you're probably wondering, did Joseph Smith ever sleep with a little 14-year-old? No. No evidence of that. Here's the reasoning for it. So, Joseph dies, saints move west, we have the RLDS Church that has stayed, and we also have the Church of Christ Temple Lot. And there's this argument over who gets the Independence, Missouri church property. RLDS Church is saying it's ours. Temple Lot Church is saying no, it's ours. RLDS Church, we have Joseph Smith III. Temple Lot says, well, you guys don't even follow Joseph Smith because he taught polygamy, and you guys don't do it. He never taught polygamy. Yes, he did. No, he didn't. Yes, he did. No, he didn't. We'll go ask his wives. And so the Temple Lot Church, they send agents out to Salt Lake to gather up Joseph's wives and have them, you know, give sworn statements regarding, yes, I was Joseph Smith's wife, and whether or not there was intimate relationships between them. So Helen Mar Kimball, she lived only a few blocks from the deposition house. She would have been a perfect witness to say, yeah, I was one of Joseph's wives, and I was that to the fullest extent of that definition. But she wasn't. She wasn't. She's later married, and in all of her reminiscences about that, it doesn't seem that there was any type of intimate relationship between them. So she may have been one of these eternity-only marriages. Yeah?
I got a question. When you go to Nauvoo, there is a Restore
The RLDS Church.
And did Emma Smith belongs to that?
She did, yes. So what happens is Brigham goes west. Brigham and Emma have a very strained relationship.
Understandably.
Yeah, right? In fact, Brigham Young claims, so there's just so much to tell. So Joseph Smith and his wives, Brigham Young, Brigham Young, the first polygamous relationship that he proposes, he's turned down.
Yep.
It's a family that he had converted in England, and so he thought, well, they're safe, because he's told this is something you gotta do. And just like Joseph, Brigham is also a recalcitrant, a very reluctant polygamist. Not something he wants to do. So he goes to the daughter of this family, who he thought was quite loyal to him, and proposes marriage. And she turns him down when they leave. And then she... they leave Nauvoo, and they're just like, nah, we're not having anything to do with this. His second proposed marriage...
Did he already have a wife before... I mean, who...
Yes.
Who was his first wife?
Oh, that's a good
question. Jerusha?
No, that was Hiram's. That was Hiram's first wife. Yeah, Mary Ann was the...
She was the one in Nauvoo.
Yes, she was the second wife. I can't remember. Yes, hold on. Mirinda.
The first one died.
Yeah, the first one dies. It's actually quite... it's a neat story. I didn't know it until I read this biography. But this author, he spent a lot of time going through Brigham's early life. And so he was... I think he was 24, she was 22. They go through life together. She has a few daughters. She gets really sick after their last one is born. And Brigham, he takes care of all the domestic chores, plus goes and works 18 hours doing, I mean, he was a jack of all trades. And so this austere, rough and grump Brigham Young, that's not the Brigham of the early, the Kirtland. He was, wake up early, take care of my daughters, make sure that my wife is warm and sitting by the fire, go work all day, come back, make dinner, take care of the laundry. I mean, he just needed it all. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, she passes away. He's remarried to Marianne Angel, I think is her name. And then after the idea of celestial marriage and plural marriage is explained to both of them, Marianne performs a posthumous sealing for Brigham Young's first wife. And so that's what helps her kind of understand the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The first polygamous relationship is rejected. There's another one that's entered into. There was a woman who had been married also quite young. I think she was 14 when she was first married to a bad man by everyone's accounts. He was a drunk. She runs from him, finds the saints, gets sealed to Brigham Young, and there are children after that. So that's kind of the Brigham Young story.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What was I going to say?
How many wives did he have?
Emma, and you were saying their relationship was to do with Emma and Brigham Young.
Oh, yeah. She's
That's right. So Brigham Young, he claims... So Joseph Smith, he's entering into these relationships very covertly. I mean, with Louisa Beeman, the account says that she and Joseph were sealed underneath a willow tree or something like that, and she was dressed up in a man's coat and a hat.
Oh.
So no one knew.
That's your dream wedding. Right.
Yeah.
Younger, you
yeah. Know. No long white veil, you get a coat and a hat.
Wow.
And so these are covert. He doesn't want just, you know, everyone to know. In fact, Heinrich, his brother, he doesn't know for a few years. I mean, there are some suspicions and some rumors that are floating around Nauvoo. But Joseph sees how his family's reacting, and he doesn't want to lose the friendship and the loyalty of his brother. It's so tough.
So there were just a few men that were called on to do it. Like
yeah.
Hiram didn't.
The majority of Nauvoo, it was like less than 3% of Nauvoo was involved. And so they're covert. We don't have a public acceptance of polygamy preached in the Latter-day Saints until like 1852. So the Saints leave in 46. I mean, they've been in Utah for a while before it's publicly acknowledged. And so in that acknowledgement, Joseph Smith says, well, the revelation where the Lord commanded not just Joseph, but the church to do this was recorded, but Emma burned it.
Yeah, I was going to say, apparently Emma did never digest this idea, you know,
because she,
you know, when I would go to Nauvoo, they say, you know, she belongs to this restored mm-hmm. Joseph Smith, and, you know, she remarried, right?
Mm-hmm. She did.
Okay.
And so her son, Joseph Smith III, when he's in his 20s, he finally feels like he receives a revelation that he's supposed to pick up his father's work. And that's where the very nice church comes from.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just lost it.
So, but to that, I mean, does Emma ever get on board? Kind of. She seems to be okay with these types of scenes. And she even acts, I mean, she is there for some of them. There are a couple of these where she's like, I'm uncomfortable with this, but if God's really telling you, okay. During the Nauvoo period, she becomes pregnant with another child, so at least there's some evidence that they're at least still talking to each other and spending time with one another. But, you know, shortly before Joseph's killed, she pulls the plug in and she's like, I want nothing to do with this. If anybody asks, I'm going to deny it.
Mm-hmm.
She's just not happy with the entire idea, which I can understand.
Mm-hmm.
I mean...
She's been through a lot.
Right.
Yeah, a lot.
Yeah. I mean, and polygamy is totally unfair. It expands the sexual and relationship opportunities of men and diminishes them for women. There's no way to get around that. It takes equality and just kicks it out the door. And so, you know, oftentimes people ask, well, is it going to be something, you know, that comes back? Or is it the perpetuation of, yeah. Is it going to be something that comes back? Well, appeal to the essay for this one.
How long have I been talking, by the
way? Oh, we got 10 minutes.
It's fun.
Lindsay, will you read that paragraph for us, church members?
Church members no longer practice plural marriage. Consistent with Joseph Smith's teachings, the church permits a man whose wife has died to be sealed to another woman when he remarries. Moreover, members are permitted to perform ordinances on behalf of deceased men and women who married more than once on earth, sealing them to all of the spouses to whom they were legally married. The precise nature of these relationships in the next life is not known, and many family relationships will be sorted out in the life to come. Latter-day Saints are encouraged to trust in our wise Heavenly Father, who loves His children and does all things for their growth and salvation.
So, we don't know. I can't see a loving God saying to Abraham, "Hey, Abraham, pick your favorite. You others, we'll figure something out." However, we're talking about this in seminary one day and asking, you know, like, so with marriage and divorce and who's going to be with whom, and how do the kids fit in, and how does that all work? I made some offhand comment, like, no, next time I see an apostle, I'll ask him. And I have a granddaughter in class. So she says, "I'll text grandpa right now." So she whips out her phone, and I'm like, "No, man, you don't." I mean, you kind of do, but no, don't. And she texts him real fast, and he happened to be in Jordan, dedicating the country of Jordan for missionary work. It's kind of cool, right? Mm-hmm. And so he texts back, and he gives the same response. He says, "I don't know how it all will work, but I believe in a God that is just and He's loving. He will make sure that if it is something we have to live, then He too will send the spirit of that law, and nobody's going to go kicking and screaming. It will be just, and it will be right. It will make sense. It will feel good." Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, you know, I think sometimes we don't understand, you know, the reason why Heavenly Father does certain things. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, He preferred them to marry second, third wife, but they are the same belief, same covenant, and why not? Because women always are outnumber men. Then why not marry people who don't have the faith and bring in unrighteous kids, you know? So sometimes we don't understand the nature, and Joseph Smith was a prophet, and Joseph Smith obeyed, and they even didn't know why he was doing it. So that's what happened, you know? Heavenly Father have reason why he does something. Which was the one that Heavenly Father told that his wife was going to have a baby, and she thought she was too old, and she went, you know, we don't understand why Heavenly Father does something, and sometimes it happens on our own, but He have a reason why He does.
Yeah, and it comes down to, I mean, it's interesting how some people can hear our Joseph Smith and polygamy, and they just throw their hands up and say, "Okay, I'm out of here. This is just too weird. I can't take it." So I mentioned Brian Hales. He hired a researcher who was very familiar with the Church History Library, who at the time was distanced from the church, atheist by his own proclamation. But he knew the Church History Library inside and out, so he was hired to do this project. And so it was while he was going through researching Joseph Smith and his involvement in polygamy and trying to get all the original documents and put them all together. That's mostly what those two big thick books are. It's just all the documents reproduced there. He was not reconverted and rebaptized to the church because of Joseph Smith's polygamy. But as he was going through, he was able to see there's really no reason why this should halt anyone from being a member of the church or even joining the church. And I thought that was an interesting kind of reverse testimony. It wasn't that. So he wasn't rebaptized because of it, but he wasn't kept out of the church because of it either. I mean, somebody who knows the details probably better than anybody else.
What was the percentage in Southwick for polygamists?
20 to 30%.
So 3% in
So it's accepted. Brigham says, "Emma, she burned the revelation." Emma says, "There was never such thing, Brigham. You're making stuff up." So he said, she said thing that's going back and forth. Eventually, how can I explain it properly? I think we had just a perfect explanation. It was a commandment that the Lord gave the people at that time. We don't understand all the details. It may have had something to do with raising the righteous generation. Well, that's something that ought to be said. Statisticians and sociologists have done studies on polygamous communities. And in a polygamous community, if a woman is a plural wife of a man, then she is going to have less children than if she was in a monogamous relationship. And so some people have wanted to say, well, there's a silver bullet. I mean, the whole raise up a generation, that doesn't work. But when you look at society as a whole, society raises up much more children if the women themselves may have fewer. So instead of Lindsay having 5 kids, you might have 3, but wife number 2 would have 4. Okay. Does that make sense? The societies have more children, but the women end up having fewer children individually. Does that make sense?
And I guess that doesn't help when they get to Utah.
It's interesting though, because you look at the mortality rates of pioneers. I mean, it was only slightly above what the national mortality rate was.
At that time?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, we tend to tell the pioneer story like, going on the trail was next to death. No, it was about like living anywhere else.
Yeah, the number of people that died is really quite small.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the Martin and Woolley handcart companies accepted it. Those were tragedies. So yes, there were some young wives. The young wives were definitely eyebrow-raising, but they were not scandalous. I mean, it was a different time. And at least the homework that I've been able to do, there's no evidence of intimate relationships with the younger wives at all. Those tended to be more of these, even if they were sealed for time and eternity, it was more dynasty building and a bringing together of families. And Joseph and lots of these little girls.
So when polygamy ended, then the 3 options ended.
Really? Yeah. Yeah. Well, because even we had temples. There used to be marriages for time done in temples. But
up until very recently.
But in order to clarify what a temple is, those don't happen in temples anymore.
Fairly recently, like when?
Like,
yeah,
like
3 years ago?
Wow.
Yeah, it wasn't too long ago.
What was that comment? Sorry, I was...
So, we know that we do sealings for time and all eternity. There were time-only marriages that were performed in temples up until not too recently.
My grandma. Yeah.
So
forth.
My mother-in-law.
But that was only like, if I was married, and
yeah,
my husband had
married
died.
Before, then they got married. And they got married.
But you didn't
want to
cancel the ceiling.
But they didn't, yeah, they didn't want
to. Okay,
it was just a nice place to do it.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, I see. I get it.
Yeah. As far as I know, eternity only ceilings are something that really only happened up through Wilford Woodruff. And so these eternity only ceilings often also refer to the law of adoption.
What is that?
That's 1840 through about 1893. So a good 50 years.
Because I had people sealed to, someone had her cousin sealed to her husband mm-hmm. in 1904.
Yeah. And so, I mean, here's another example.
Her deceased cousin.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah. Another example of that, Brigham Young and his sister are talking with Joseph Smith about the nature of sealings and eternal marriage and whatnot. And Brigham's sister was getting along in years, and she's like, well, I don't ever want to get married. And Joseph makes some comments to the effect that, well, if you knew what I knew about the nature of the ceiling, you would just find some good person. And Brigham is like, well, just seal her to you. Okay. And so it's more of a formality, like baptism, the formality of the ordinance. The ceiling just has to be in place. And it was only after learning that one of my friends, my best friend's situation, started to make any sense. So my best friend was sealed in the temple. Lovely young woman. They actually met at our wedding reception. Well, they didn't.
That was their first date.
Okay, sorry, I didn't mean that. Their first date was to our wedding reception. Things don't work out. They get divorced, and as he's going through, you know, the first presidency approval to get resealed to the wife that he has now, and all of that, you know, he's wondering, well, why is the ceiling left in place to my first wife? Oh, I don't have anything to do with her. And the explanation is there are certain blessings just by virtue of that sealing being in place. Just like there are blessings that come to a person from having been baptized, even if they're not living a covenant life, there are blessings that are there and will remain there until that person is excommunicated. And so we don't remove the sealing blessings that come just by virtue of having that in place, because there's some formality of ordinances that seems to be going on.
Yeah, don't they say in order to make it to the third heaven or something,
you have to be sealed. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so does that mean if she repents and gets her life together and my buddy's going to be there in the celestial kingdom, and all of a sudden, here comes wife number one. She's like,
look how good I look.
I lost a lot of weight.
I didn't have any kids. She's still got a little bit of hips.
I mean, I don't think that the Lord's going to force them in any type of union at all.
As I was thinking about that situation during that time, and trying to, you know, we know how sad he was and his, like, wife-to-be. She didn't really feel comfortable with the whole situation. But then I thought about how just God is, too. That, you know, if someone makes a poor choice, that, you know, like, that they will eventually have to pay for that. But I love also that if we've ever made a good choice, that will still be honored. But
right.
Anyway, just...
Yeah,
I like that balance.
Are not just punitive.
Right.
But good choices are also blessed with lifelong. Yeah,
I think, you know, this went on way, way back in the past. You know, there was some leaders and important men that, you know, it was okay if God said they could have lots of wives.
Mm-hmm.
So this is not something new. And, you know, based on the fact that in order to make it to the third heaven,
mm-hmm.
you need to be sealed to somebody.
Yeah. And a lot of them, that's what was going on. I've got to be sealed to someone.
Mm-hmm.
So when we get to the numbers, you know, Joseph's been having some 35 women sealed to him. Some of them were sealed to him after he had already died. So it's not quite as salacious as, you know, the New York Times when the church publishes this essay and Joseph Smith, the New York Times says, Moore finally admits Joseph Smith married for 35 wives. Well, there's more to the story. And there's a whole lot more to the story. So, all right, 14-year-olds, how early? Covered that one. Why did it end? So, the short story is the United States government passes unconstitutionally a few different pieces of legislation that focus at the Latter-day Saints specifically.
Mm-hmm.
With the Edmonds-Tucker Act in like 1877, 1876, it gives the United States government the power to come in and confiscate any church property that is valued over $50,000, aka the four temples that the church had produced in that time. So we've got Salt Lake, St. George, Manti, and Logan had just been completed. So at the time of Wilford Woodruff, who was the president of the church at this juncture, he's left with a decision, and it's there in the excerpts from the manifesto at the back of the Doctrine and Covenants. Do we hold on to polygamy and lose our temples and send all of our men to jail, or do we abandon polygamy and keep our temples and keep our families together? And he says he was full well prepared to go to jail and to lose the temples if the Lord had not made that decision for him. No. You keep the temples, you keep the families together, we are abandoning polygamy at this point. So that's the short story. There's a much longer story to that.
And he absolutely felt inspired
that
he got the word on that.
Yeah. Well, there is some indication that he had put a halt to new plural marriages before the manifesto revelation was received, you know, just kind of him seeing the writing on the wall. But before he was going to present it to the church as, this is our position. Yeah, and it's there at the back of the Doctrine and Covenants. It's funny, because they're not assigned section numbers. We rarely read them. They're really good.
So the manifesto came, not necessarily pressure from government, but sort of pressure from government. Then how did they justify, because like I'm a descendant of the plural families that got sent to Canada or to Mexico.
Uh-huh.
If the manifesto is, that's why we're related. If the church members were told to cease and desist,
uh-huh. What about Canada and Mexico?
Yeah, so am I like a rebel?
So 1890, we get the manifesto, which is...
In 1890.
So that is, we are going to abide the law of the land. Latter-day Saints in the United States, we're not going to do this anymore. Those in Canada and Mexico, they keep going, and there are even some members of the 12 and other priesthood leaders who are still solemnizing polygamous unions, unknown to the First Presidency. And Matthias Cowley and John W. Taylor they're both removed from the Quorum of the Twelve. John W. Taylor, he's eventually excommunicated.
For that reason.
So, jump ahead to 1902 or 1906, where you get President Joseph F. Smith, who gives the second manifesto, where he says, polygamy in the church regardless, because no longer are we just abiding by the law of the land. Now the revelation is from God that we're stopping it church-wide. And so now, if you practice polygamy after this point, you're excommunicated, because now you're not just breaking the law of the land, you're breaking God's law, and that's justification for being expelled from the church. So that's the end of it. Emma, my heart goes out to her. I mean, that must have... I will hope no one ever gives Emma a hard time about anything.
Really? She's had enough hard times.
And I mean, Joseph has some very tender statements regarding Emma, you know, the love of his youth. And I mean, he's entered into these polygamous relationships, but you can tell it tears at him to see her having to endure not knowing the same things that he knows and to see the same things that he's seen. You know, Brigham Young made the statement that, you know, if Joseph wanted to see Emma again, he'd have to go to hell to get her. Well, again, they're not very good friends. Brigham was overreaching with that statement.
That was prophetic.
I think Emma's going to be just fine. So, you know, mid-30s, how much? Quite a bit. I mean, he was very involved in this. And for me, when I look at all of this, I mean, I'm glad it's not something we're asked to do today. But we are asked to do some similar things in a world that is trumpeting tolerance as the only virtue that matters anymore. We're asked to take a pretty hard line on marriage between one man and one woman when we have this in our history. And there's some dissonance there. I don't think any generation of the church is ever going to be completely dissonant-free. There's going to be something where the Lord is going to continually pull at our social policies, our political ideologies, trying to understand our own history, family relationships. Because it's not just about creating a nice bedtime story. You and I are supposed to become celestial beings, and there is a refining and a purifying process that we know is the only way the Lord can accomplish that. Go ahead.
I think there is time and reason for everything. You know, the church is grown by missionary going out, mm-hmm. you know, bringing in new members.
Yeah.
I think that was the way the Lord keep members together, sister from leaving the church, you know.
Yeah, there's definitely wisdom to it. You know, it's interesting now, my parents having served in Africa, now it's just the opposite, where they would baptize an African family and a man would have multiple wives. Well, that's not allowed in the church these days. And so what do you do? And so my father would have to work with, well, you'll live with this wife, but you're still financially and emotionally responsible for these other wives and children. And so there's a whole, I mean, for them.
Yeah, well, when we start baptizing the Muslims,
you know?
Yeah, they like their multiple wives.
They can have four. What's that?
They're only allowed four. But they can have four. Yeah.
And the whole issue between the Shiites and the whoever is the story just like Joseph Smith? Mm-hmm. That there, it was somebody's son, and they thought that's where the power went and authority in it.
So I do. I believe in God, but I also believe in a God that keeps things interesting. At least that's been my experience with him. Very rarely has it just been, oh yeah, he's the divine butler in the sky that just gives me everything I want. No, he's a father that chastises and tutors and teaches.
And sometimes lets us make mistakes.
He sure does. And if I'm any indication, it's happening.
I have a logistical question about, so you said in Nauvoo, like maybe 3%, mm-hmm. and it was probably like Joseph probably said, you need to do this. So once the 20 years of pain there in Salt Lake, was it kind of that way? Were they given
a priesthood assignment?
Yeah. Or was it just like, oh, that sounds really great to me?
Not a little of both. It was a little bit of both. There were some assignments, but also it was kind of the understanding polygamy is a commandment now. And so my family wasn't quite faithful enough. We don't have any polygamy in my roots.
That's kind of shocking,
isn't it?
Yeah.
Do you have some?
Oh yeah.
I do too.
So we got sent down to Southern Utah. That's why we're from Kanab. Brigham's like, you go down there.
We can't see you. I have a relative who, after the manifesto, was expecting and still living with the husband, and she fled to, I don't remember where she was at the time. Anyway, but she named that baby Exile.
Oh, really? Fascinating.
Okay. When James tells people he's called in Mexico. Colonia Dublin.
Yeah, that's accurate. So, any other wrap-up questions, things that you wanted, we're hoping we'd cover, just kind of what passed? Not because I'm trying to avoid anything, it's just...
We can bring it up next time.
I could only remember so many things.
There is no next time. Well, there is
not next week. The week after that, we'll talk about where that comes from, and influences the difference between the presentation of the endowment and the actual endowment.
Sure, the week after that, the time of our flight.
I've done a lot of homework. I still believe. I do. I'm convinced Joseph Smith is a prophet, and I think he's a pattern. The Lord's going to tug at something in each of our lives, and it's just going to make us go, really? That? Okay. Seems to be the program. Can I shout out the name of Jesus Christ?
Amen. Thank you so much. That's great.
Sinner seal.
Yeah, you know, I'm working last night, and I say, I'm always coming, I don't come.
We say thank you.
Yeah, I love it.
Take the baby.